Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
I actually met my wife on CatholicSingles.com, if you can believe that.
Really?
Yes, I had never done that before. Didn't have any problems with dating.
Natalie and Aaron met on CatholicSingles.com after they realized that they needed to find someone who shared their faith. Meet other faithful Catholics on the original Catholic dating site. Download our app today for free. Looking for a way to build daily prayer discipline? Seen the rise in mindfulness meditation, but not sure if it is possible to meditate in a way that's consistent with your Catholic faith? Just looking for a way to breathe new life into your existing prayer routine? No matter what you're looking for, Hollow is here to help. Hollow is a Catholic prayer and meditation app that helps users deepen their relationship with God through audio-guided contemplative prayer sessions. From meditations on the daily gospel, to the rosary, to daily examines, Hollow has something for everyone. Hollow is the number one Catholic app in the U.S. It is free to download and has permanently free content, but you can also check out all of the premium sessions for 30 days, risk-free, by signing up at www.hollow.app/breadbox.
One, two, three, listen.
Welcome to the Shoot the Shiitake podcast. I'm Father Leo Padalinghug, a Catholic priest on a mission to bring people of all different backgrounds together to learn, to love, and accept one another. Even if we disagree, we have to be willing to listen to each other as God does with us and as God intends for us to do with each other. We're not going to get into the super high details of church and religion, but we're really going to take those technical aspects and make it more practical simply by listening. And today, I have a deep dish discussion with Father Patrick Hyde. He's been a Dominican priest for 4 years, an administrator and director of a campus ministry in Indianapolis. He's also been picked to be one of the priests who's going to anoint people, that is, help prepare them to die in a spiritual way, suffering from COVID-19. So this is going to be a very deep and interesting presentation, especially as I recorded this interview on Holy Thursday in 2020. And if you want to support our podcast and all of our conversional aspects of ministry just by having conversations, please visit us at platinggrace.com and click support. And now get ready for a deep dish discussion on Shoot the Shiitake with me and my special guest, Father Patrick Hyde. Father Patrick, thanks for coming on Shoot the Shiitake with me. I want to just start off by asking, how long have you been ordained a priest?
I have been a priest just under 4 years. So
okay.
Four years ordained in May this year.
Where are you from originally?
I'm originally from St. Louis, born and raised there. So that's when my parents are still there, and a couple of my siblings are there as well.
Okay. And right now, working in campus ministry, I can just imagine everything is just shut down, is it not?
In a way, yeah, in terms of, obviously the students have been sent home for the semester, but we, because we work with Focus, and the students are very savvy at technological things, we still are ongoing with discipleships and small group Bible studies and socials and things along those lines, albeit electronically. But yeah, in terms of the building itself, yeah, we're pretty much shut down, and campus is essentially a ghost town, which is where we are, so yeah.
And you're quarantined, so to speak, as well. Have you actually been able to get out?
Not in the sense of like being out among people, obviously, but living in the middle of a college campus, a huge college campus, in terms of population of students in the country, I'm able every day to go out and walk around campus to pray for our student and resident parishioners and just to be out and about. It's a beautiful time of year to be out and about. But yeah, I mean, it's we're here and as a Dominican priest, I live with three other priests and a student brother. And one of our priests is 87 years old, and so we've been very careful about, not being around anyone other than our own group. And then actually another one of our priests here is going through chemotherapy right now, so he's immunocompromised. So we've had to be particularly vigilant in terms of if we do You even run into someone as you're out for a walk and maintaining social distancing, stuff like that, so that we don't bring anything back into the house.
Sure. Okay. And so let me just ask you, because when I originally saw your tweet that you were picked to be a handful of people to prepare yourself to be able to anoint people, that's been a real struggle in the Catholic Church. And it's an interesting time. And we're going to jump into the meaning of priesthood for you, since it is Holy Thursday of 2020, literally right in the middle of the pandemic. But I just wanted to get this interview in because I want to hear about, first and foremost, why were you picked to do this? I mean, is this something you applied for, or is this something that the bishop just said, you know, Father Patrick, he looks like he can handle it? I mean, why exactly were you the guy?
Yeah, Father Leo, one of the things is that, you know, there are certain requirements that you have to have in order to do this type of ministry. You have to be under 60, and you have to basically have no pre-existing conditions that would make you vulnerable in a serious way. I don't exactly know what all of those are. And of the pastors in my deanery, I'm not pastor, I'm just the administrator right now, but I'm the only one who's not 60.
Okay, I'm sorry, you just kind of faded out. I'm sorry, you just faded out. Okay. Can you repeat that again, please?
Sure. In my deanery, I'm the only pastor who's not at least 60 years old.
Okay.
So that's step one. And then in my community...
How old are you again?
I'm 34.
Okay.
And then in my community, one of the priests who is under 60 is immunocompromised because he's going through chemotherapy.
Sure.
And so the vicar for clergy basically said, hey, you're the only one right now who I know and I can ask to do this.
So you are kind of it. You just kind of faded out again. Father, are you with me?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, yeah. So you are kind of like the short straw, so to speak. You know, and I don't say that in a derogatory way, but you know, they're just literally going through the process of elimination. Most of our priests are not very young. A lot of them are older. And, you know, let's admit that our priesthood sometimes lends to some unhealthier habits. And so there are some unhealthy aspects to the priesthood. Not all, you know, I mean, there's some who are ridiculously healthy and they kind of make me sick in a, you know, Christian way, of course. But but I just wanted to hear what your thoughts were when they said, hey, we need you to anoint people dying from coronavirus or the COVID-19 or whatever we're calling it in this flavor of the day. What was your initial reaction?
Honestly, I thought of, there's a line from St. Augustine, and I'm going to butcher it off the top of my head, basically, where he says, you know, for myself, I'm a Christian, or and for you, I'm a bishop, right? And the idea being is that, like, you know, I follow Christ as a Catholic and as a Christian, and I felt called to the priesthood to serve other people. You know, I don't do this for my own glory or for my own edification. And so when he called, it was like, okay, here's obviously a burden and a challenge, but at the same time, like at the moment of death or as people are approaching death, they're in most need of God's mercy and God's love at that time. And I also thought of when I was studying to be a priest, I spent a summer over in Africa, and I spent a couple weeks in Ethiopia, and I went to the Missionaries of Charity in Addis Ababa, and I remember them holding the hand of a man and praying the Divine Mercy Chaplet as he died. And thinking, you know, okay, like this is what the Lord is calling me to in this particular time is, you know, to be his faithful servant so that in a moment of crisis and difficulty, I might be of service in bringing the sacraments and in the Lord's love and mercy to those in the hour of death.
And so I'm going to ask you a question. It's going to sound like I'm kind of pushing at you a little bit, but I'm really not, because this is just honestly what people think, especially since I've met you. I don't know. I've never met you, but I know who you are on Twitter, and I appreciate some of your tweets, and I follow you. And you asked for, you kind of just made that news known, and I guess you asked for prayers, but, you know, priests who are on Twitter can sometimes be accused of just showing off or just, you know, I mean, like our ministries are public, so we've got to put out some of those pretty pictures and the for me, cool food and happy people, you know, to see happy people in church. That's worth sharing on the internet, to be perfectly honest with you. But you shared this. What have been some of the reactions, and what were you hoping to get? I'm not saying you weren't asking for attention, but you put it out on Twitter, and it got retweeted several times. What would be the reason why you did that, especially in relationship to the sensitivities of the patients that you're going to be serving?
Well, I'd say first and foremost, to give the Catholics a
You know, we take great succor in the sacraments, and to not be able to have access to them is a great pain for all of us.
So wait a second. You said succor, and that means sweetness, delight. You know, a lot of my listeners be like, did he just call these people suckers?
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
No, that's all right. Keep going though. So this does give people delight and calm.
And that's what we're called to as priests, is to bring people to sacraments. You know, we make a vow at our ordination to faithfully administer the sacraments to people. So I first and foremost wanted people, especially Catholics, who are in this unprecedented moment in their lives, to know that regardless of even personal risk to myself, we as priests, and in this particular situation myself, are ministering and are willing to go wherever there is a need, you know, because I think a lot of people feel like, well, the church building is closed, therefore no one can get sacraments at any time.
Sure.
And I wanted the people to know, like, we are, even in the craziness of all this, willing to minister and go to anyone who is in danger of death to serve and to minister the sacraments. So that was the first thing. But the second thing was just for spiritual support. It's, you know, I'm not terribly concerned in terms, you know, because where I am, I may never actually get called to do something like this. I do know some priests who are, and it is a burden and it is a challenge. And, you know, as members of the body of Christ, and especially in a time of social distancing and isolation and quarantine, we can still be united and support each other in prayer.
So are you scared? I mean, if you do get called, was fear a part of your reaction? And again, I'm just asking not...
Oh, sure.
I'm not asking for piety. I'm just asking for true humanity. Like, what were some of the negative things that you experienced, if any?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, you know, I'm a Dominican, so I love St. Thomas Aquinas, right? And to be courageous, we have to fully know the extent to which my actions can lead, right? The courageous person is the person who knows that if I do this, I could die, but chooses to do it anyway because it's the greatest good. And so, you know, knowing and being afraid, or, you know, having that fear of I could get sick, is a real part of going through the human experience. I'd be lying to you if I didn't say, I didn't think to myself, oh goodness, I could get sick, or, mm-hmm. you know, someone else.
And what about your community? Because once you do get called and you go out, you're going to, in a way, have to self-quarantine even further, because you've got people who are susceptible to getting sick. Or
sure. Sure. Yeah. And that's, we haven't quite gotten to that level, because just a couple days ago I was told about this. It just, you know, we know that in terms of getting rid of the protect, what a PPE, I don't exactly know what that stands mm-hmm. for. I have all those things, but getting rid of all of that and making sure that that's disposed of, coming home and, you know, making sure that, you know, I am able to put my clothes that I went into the hospital in and into the washing machine as quickly as possible, taking a shower as quickly as possible without necessarily touching things. You know, there are some protocols that have been put in place. I actually have a call right after this with the lady from the Archdiocese of Indianapolis, who's been working all of this to make sure that, you know, that there are, you know, some training I go through so as to not put the, you know, especially our compromised or vulnerable brothers in a position where they could get the virus.
So that's my question. Who are you getting the training from? And is it giving you a sense of confidence, or is it giving you more fear?
Sure. I don't exactly know her name, but I know that she works.
That's okay. But I mean, is it the hospital or the church?
It's the, she works is emergency.
Oh, you just kind of faded out again.
Sorry about that. Sorry.
It just faded out again. Can you repeat that?
She works for the Archdiocese Catholic Charities Office on emergency preparedness and things along those lines. I honestly haven't even listened to the voicemail. I just saw that she called and said she wanted to talk with me about that, so as to make sure if I do get put into that situation, I know how to put the gear on and how to get rid of it in such a way that I'm, you know, exposing or myself and other people as least as a little as possible.
So the gear, I know that that's a big deal. We're hearing how people are saying there's just not enough. I mean, how many pieces of equipment are there, and what do you have to, how many do you have?
I haven't really gone through the bag, but I think I have two suits essentially. You know, that I beyond that, I just looking at the bag, that's what I have.
Are you going to be able to anoint using your skin, or do you have to put gloves on in order to anoint?
You, in terms of being with a COVID patient, from what I've been told, you have to be totally covered in the PPE. So, and you have to bring in the holy oil, the oil of the sick, for anointing in a, you know, in a Ziploc bag in a, on a cotton swab already. Mm. And so you would take the cotton out of the Ziploc bag, and then you would put it back in, you know, anoint the person with a cotton swab and gloves and all that on,
sure.
Put the cotton back into the bag, and then you either – they would do biohazard if you're at the hospital, or you would have to dispose of it, you know, at, when you got home.
And have you talked to any priests who are doing this ministry currently?
I have been in just initial contact because of what I put up on social media with a Dominican friar, Father John Devaney, I know up in New York City. And I know he's a hospital chaplain, and he's been, you know, on the front lines of this for a few weeks. We haven't had a back and forth yet, but he's reached out just to let me know he's supporting me. And if I have any questions, I can reach out to him, and he can kind of help me walk through the whole thing.
You know, we call our doctors and the paramedics and all of our nurse staff, just anyone who's working in the hospital, whether they are in administration or even, obviously, even the custodial support there, they're all heroes. Would this put you in a category of you? I mean, again, I'm not asking any sense of arrogance, but people are saying, you know, you guys are heroes. And what does that do for you and your priesthood?
You know, I've never really considered myself, because I know my sins, to be a hero or to be a particularly upright and virtuous person. But I, you know, I think, you know, what is we know this in literature, we know this in movies and TV and whatnot, you know, kind of the hero's journey and the struggle to be a hero. But, you know, but there always has to be that revelation within that hero's journey piece of a greater cause for which you're doing this, right? So I think, you know, heroic virtue is that, you know, it's not just doing things because we have to do them, but doing them because we know and honor and love God with all of our hearts. And we want to serve and love him, but also serve and love other people. And so I feel called, you know, and in this moment to do this. I don't know if it makes me a hero, but I feel like any priest in this situation would, in you know, because of all of this, would be willing to do this because that's what we signed up for.
Do you really think that? Because, I mean, I've heard from a few other people that there are actually some priests who are very nervous to do it. You know, so what would be your thought or your, what would be some of your words to them if they are feeling fear?
Well, I mean, you know, I always go
besides
to
just like
of,
just grow sure. the faith up and just do it.
Yeah. You know? Well, you know, one of my favorite liturgical acts, I don't get to do it often, is you know, working in campus ministry my entire priesthood, but is at a funeral. Mm. The first thing you say in a funeral when you welcome the body at the door is, you know, in the waters of baptism, this person so and so died with Christ. You know, we've already died. Right, you know, in the reading from Romans for the Easter Vigil, right, you know, that we are born to new life through death, right, that we have to go through this. And so
what do you mean you by know, that? Because some people who hear this show might think, what are they talking about? Why are they always talking about them dying? Can you maybe break that down for some of my listeners?
In terms of baptism or in general? Or
well,
both?
In general, in both. Yeah, I mean, just because sure. you use that term that you're dying to self.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell us
well,
about
I mean
that.
That so and you know we believe that as Christians that the waters of baptism are we are so conformed, you know, and changed, transformed really from the inside out, our soul is marked by this, that we become a new creation. And in order for something new to come about, you know, the old person has to die. And so in Christ, we believe that all Christians are new creations, that and not only that, but because of what we'll celebrate tomorrow in Good Friday, we believe that God himself has conquered sin and death. And so, you know, as St. Paul says, for us, you know, life is Christ and death is gain, right? That we live this life knowing full well that the price of our soul has already been purchased and won for us, and that we're called to live in the glory of and the joy that comes from following the Lord. It's hard to think that, right?
Yeah, it is. And so I want to just make it easier. How are you experiencing joy at this moment then? Like, just again, for people who may not be as in tune to faith and they hear these theological concepts, I get it. I'm in the background saying, amen, brother, preach it. But there are going to be a lot of people who maybe don't have formation, maybe are kind of just inquisitive with Christianity, and they just want to hear what we are thinking at this moment. Where's the joy? Yeah. What does that look like? How are you actually having it? How does it feel?
Yeah, well, I mean, I spent a long part of my life, in my early adulthood, I entered the seminary, the Dominican Novitiate, when I was 23, so I wasn't like super out there and wild and crazy. But like my whole, you know, high school and college life, I was living for myself. And there was pleasure that came from that. But, you know, at the end of the day, I'd look in the mirror and I didn't have joy and I didn't feel like this meant something and, you know, that was moving in a different direction. Now it's like, you know, by giving my life in a radical way as a religious priest, all of a sudden it's like, you know, in just simply sitting in the chapel and praying for people and in, you know, going out of my way to... I don't like talking on the phone, so this is very awkward for me. But like, I, you know,
calling, well, there's your penance, brother.
Yeah, calling resident parishioners and calling our students and just checking in with them and seeing how they're doing and doing things that on my own and for myself don't bring me the greatest amount of pleasure, but by doing it and loving people in the midst of this craziness, it brings about joy, right? You know, joy is a fruit of the spirit.
So, in other words, you're just being less selfish and more selfless, and that gives you a sense of joy. Yeah, I mean, I think that that's going to be something for, you know, listeners to just think when you're called to do something difficult, it's not about you anymore. It's about trying to serve someone else, and you do get a satisfaction. You know, people feel good when you do something kind for other people. That's just a fact. Now, coming to the priesthood, because, you know, this is a Holy Thursday. I made it specifically a point to try to get an interview with a priest on Holy Thursday, because for Christians, for Catholics, this is the day that Jesus started his priesthood at the Last Supper. What has been for you maybe a reflection about your priesthood? You're relatively young as a priest, you know, 4 years. I've been a priest 20 plus years, thankfully not jaded, but certainly not a pushover, you know, but as you can tell. But in terms of you as a young priest, because let's be honest, some people don't get to 5 years. Some of our brothers leave. If you get to 7 years, then you've actually broke the mold. I mean, that's just the reality. Sure. So you better persevere, Father. But with you, what's been kind of going on in your heart, in your own mind? In other words, can you share some of your personal spirituality with our listeners?
Yeah, well, I mean, as a Dominican priest, you know, we have a great patrimony in terms of our intellectual heritage. And so I've always kind of approached the faith in a more intellectual way, like really studying and really chewing on the difficult parts of our faith and finding the great wisdom and joy that comes from the heart of the faith, especially on, you know, the most difficult issues. And as a priest,
give me an example of one of those difficult issues, if you don't mind.
Well, I mean, the one that's easiest for me, just, you know, is just, you know, the challenges and the realities and the struggle that we all have with sex and sexuality, right? Like, that's something that every human being from, you know, time, because of sin, is going to struggle with, because we have this inherent desire for something that is good, but because we have this inherent desire, it can be so easily twisted and misused. And so to be able to find within, not just this kind of legalistic, you have to do this because, you know, God says so or because the church says so, but to actually find the richness of understanding not only who I am, but understanding myself in relationship to other people and how this gift of, especially as a religious and a priest, this gift of celibate chastity makes it possible for me to love in ways that are, you know, not necessarily my own. They're God's ways of loving, right? I'm not, you know, I think especially on a college campus, as a priest on a college campus, the way in which, you know, as a man and as a priest, I can love the women here because I'm not seeking anything in return, you know, and understanding what it's like to love selflessly and sacrificially and how we're called to that has, you know, it's not something I would have thought when I was 20 years old would bring me joy and would make me excited about going to work every day. But, you know, once you kind of understand it, not just in, and you live it, it's kind of that, you know, that both and, right, of the Catholic faith and reason piece, right? We give ourselves, but we also try to understand it. It's just been remarkably powerful for me.
So let me just say, how does one do that then? Because there'll be people who are listening who are just going to wonder, well, how do you kind of deal with the difficult things? I personally believe that our world is just too busy and we don't take the time in meditative, contemplative reflection to consider these issues, so we just feed off of the headlines of the news, and we know just how ridiculous they are, but people take them as gospel truths. What exactly can people, lay people, normal people, as if you're not normal, as if I'm not normal, but people won't think that we are. I mean, that's just the reality. They don't think that we're normal people, but we are. But how do you translate this ability to kind of face the difficult things of our Catholic Christian faith? How can they do that? Because they're not living in a monastery or in a rectory or a convent.
Sure.
How do they do that?
Well, there's an old Latin. I was a Latin major in college. So there's an old Latin maxim, nemo dat quod non habet. Nobody gives what nobody has, right? Yep. You have to have something in order to give it away. And so, we first and foremost were able to find and know joy and love in the midst of the challenges because we know the person of Jesus Christ, right? We know in our hearts that he is Lord and we've accepted him and we choose to follow after him. Now, obviously, as you're a priest and I'm a priest and a religious, like we have a particular call to a deep and immersive spiritual life that most people just simply don't have the time to do. I think of my parents having my dad running a company, my mom and dad having six kids, they didn't have that time to dedicate, two or three hours a day to the interior life and to sacred study and all of that kind of stuff, and time with scripture. But, they're called through, that daily ritual, the Latin word that we get the word rule from, the rule of St. Benedict is regula, right? Regularity, by having a regular prayer life, by having a consistent encounter with the Lord. I always encourage people, hey, you have a 10 or 15 minute drive to work every day? Yeah, I do. Okay, turn off the radio. Read the scriptures read the gospel for the day. Invite the Lord into your life as you're going into work. And you're going to start seeing God more and more in your work. And I think that's the challenge for each and every one of us to say, here's my state in life. How can I inform this and invite the Lord more into this life?
Intentionality and regularity is kind of
absolutely
what you're talking about here. Now, when it comes to Holy Thursday, the institution of the sacred Eucharist and, of course, the sacred priesthood built on charity and service. What are some of the reflections that you're going through, and especially with you having to now minister to people who are dying in a very public death? Like, what are you going to do? I mean, obviously, the ritual takes care of everything because that's Christ doing it through you. But what kind of personal things are you doing to help them die peacefully?
Yeah, the sad thing is too in all of this is that, not only are people dying from, COVID-19, but people are dying. But that's what happens in life. And so we've also, had the challenge of ministering and having to go to hospitals to minister to people who are dying who aren't infected with this. And and especially to their families, here in my deanery, actually, sadly, the dean of our deanery, so the priest and, kind of our group of priests in this area, he died. He got sick. It wasn't COVID. But in the midst of this, and so, I think one of the things that has really had to come out of all of this in terms of preparation for Holy Week and whatnot is how, the priest is not a priest for himself. That it would be, in a sense, really easy to just kind of shut everything off and say, well, the offices are closed, I can't talk to you, or the offices are closed, we can't have public mass. But we're called to constantly be for the people. And even if that just means praying by name for as many people as we can, calling, and especially to the people who are sick, and reaching out to them and loving them, and then consoling those who are going through the struggle, because everyone right now is suffering and struggling. And this is the beauty of it all for us, and this has been a big part of my reflection, is that oftentimes in our life we can feel very alone in our isolation. We can feel like no one knows the pain that I know right now, or no one knows the experience that I'm going through right now. And in a sense, that's true, because we have particular ways of going through life. But right now, we're all in this challenge together. And it's a great way for us to reflect corporately, but also as priests, of the great, the doctrine of the communion of saints, right? That, at every Mass, the whole communion of saints is present, in every single one of our lives in prayer, because we've been incorporated into the mystical body of Christ through baptism. We are united to each other. We're never alone in the midst of this. And in fact, in my own celebration of the Eucharist and in praying for the people, I feel a closeness to the people that I don't know if I've felt before.
Sure.
And then on Palm Sunday, for instance, one of the biggest days, feasts of the year, one of the most popular masses, preaching and presiding at an empty church. But I felt the love, and I felt a connection to the people in a way that I don't know if I've ever felt while preaching, even though, you know, oh, sure. oftentimes in a parish like mine, we have over 1,000 people at that mass.
You know, so it's just I feel beautiful. The same way. The social distancing has brought about spiritual closeness. I'll just admit it. I kind of cried a little bit when I offered the blessings of the palms because I just thought, you know, I'm uniting my prayer to the prayers of every priest who would rather be in front of people instead of my stupid phone, you know, just doing my thing. Now, I've got one last question for you here, and this is, again, a very odd question, but maybe not at all, because usually I talk to people who are not necessarily of a Catholic background or different from me. I would ask them, and I'm going to ask you this, you know, what can I do as a priest to help you, Father Patrick Hyde?
Well, Father, I think the first thing is just prayer.
I knew you were going to say that.
There's a special brotherhood we have as priests. I remember that, you know, when I was ordained a priest, the priest who baptized me, you know, invited me to go say mass at his parish. And I called him up and I said, "Oh, Monsignor, blah, blah, blah." And then he said, "Patrick, let me stop you right there. You know, call me John." And it was like my grandfather saying, "Call me by your first name." Like it was just, but you know, he was trying to say to me like, "Hey, there's a bond we have now as brothers in the priesthood, you know, that we're called to be on the same level so as to pray for one another and to lift each other up and support each other." So I think, you know, first and foremost, just to have that spiritual support. But I think in general, too, is just, you know, encouraging and reaching out to people and preaching and speaking a message of hope. And, you know, I was talking with a priest friend of mine a couple of weeks ago, and he was, you know, we talked about the great Lent of 2002 when all the sex abuse stuff broke. And he was saying, you know, obviously this is all happening during Lent, but it's like, instead of being a great Lent, it's been a great Good Friday, right? We've been going through Good Friday for the entirety of Lent this year in a way that we've never had that opportunity before. And so, you know, not only just praying for each other, but also dying for each other and offering the sufferings and the sacrifices we have for a purpose, right? Because we see in the cross we celebrate tomorrow that our suffering, when united to the will of God, is redemptive. And so just encouraging and people in particular, the people with whom do you minister, to just say, hey, those things that you're struggling with right now, take them to Jesus.
Yeah.
And let him be the one who heals you. Let him be the one who transforms you and brings you new life through this
death. So in full disclosure, ladies and gentlemen, I reached out to Father Patrick Hyde again on Twitter, I guess I can't even remember, several months ago, and talked about a theology of food and being able to present that to his college students at some point. And you kind of jumped at the idea and be like, that would be a great thing. Well, guess what? It's got to happen. When all of this is said and done, God willing, we'll be able to feed each other. Body, mind, and spirit.
Absolutely.
And for a guy who says that he's not very good talking on the phone, you are awesome.
Oh, thank you.
And when I come back, I am going to share my carryout order. What did I learn from Father Patrick Hyde, campus chaplain and also administrator for a parish? But now, more importantly, he's going to be ministering to the sick and the dying of COVID. When we return with more Shoot the Shiitake in just a moment. And welcome back for my carryout order. It was great to talk to another priest on Holy Thursday. And for people who are listening with my carryout order, again, you know, usually I would interview people of different backgrounds. And he, like myself, we're both priests. I've been a priest, you know, at least 16 years longer than him. And I, too, have the same type of vows that he takes, you know, which is chastity, obedience, and poverty being in the type of religious secular community that I'm in. But just hearing a young priest, and obviously young enough to do campus ministry and to keep up with college kids, it was just great to, I'll just be honest with you, it was great to be renewed in what it means to be a young priest. You have that zeal and that get up and go kind of attitude. It's the one thing that made John run faster than Peter when he heard that Jesus's tomb was empty. It was like, get up and go. And it was that same youthfulness that made John at the foot of the cross with Mary and just always there and almost not afraid of anything. And to be honest with you, young faithfulness, but it has to also be formed, gives you a fearlessness. And so for people who are listening, you're going to have to just know that my carryout order is for me to make sure that I'm staying young at heart, making sure that I'm not a bitter, jaded old priest. And that can happen. I'm grateful to God that I know very few bitter and jaded old priests. In the same way, I am grateful that I know a lot of joyful priests and a lot of people who are excited to make those great sacrifices. The other thing that I learned in my carryout order, and it's not what I learned, but just reminded of, is that whole idea of regularity. You see, as a religious, Father Patrick Hyde and his brother priests or others in his community literally live by a rule. You know, in some houses, they would ring a bell that basically meant time for prayer, two bells, time to eat, three bells, something else, you know, maybe not like that, but they lived a regular prayer life. And right now, at least I'm speaking in the middle of this pandemic of 2020, nothing is regular. Nothing is normal, but we can make it that. So even if you don't have to be at work at 9 o'clock, you can still wake up at 6 o'clock and you can still start your day with prayer and making sure that prayer becomes a regular part of your day. So this whole idea of intentionality and regularity, great reminders, even for me as a priest, because I'll be honest with you, in this middle of this COVID nonsense, in this middle of this corona craziness, there have been days when I just literally wake up because I had nothing to do until 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Now, granted, for me, sleeping in was like 8:30. Usually I'm up at 5 or 5:30, you know, 6 o'clock, and generally sometimes even earlier because my flight might be at 5:30 in the morning. So I've got to be out of the hotel, no doubt, by 3:30 or 4 o'clock. So, but this idea of intentionality and regularity, something definitely to put into practice. And the final carryout order that I learned from Father Patrick was just making sure, you know, and this is no criticism to him whatsoever. He did amazingly, but he was talking on such a deep level. And for me, I'm always reminding myself that people who are talking to me, they might understand what the heaven I'm talking about. So I've got to always try to make things as bite-sizable for them as possible. So, for example, when he used the word succor, which is, you know, sucre in French would be sweetness, you know, like Our Lady of Prompt Succor, which is Our Lady to bring consolation and sweetness. That's a title given to the Virgin Mary, very French. So when he talked about that, I was trying to be in the listening position of what, say, like any of my listeners might be, who might know the faith a little bit, might not be fully informed. But what I learned was he talked on such a deep level because he's obviously got a deep spirituality. And it's going to be important to make sure that we can reflect deeply, but also to be able to reflect deeply for people who are shallow. I don't know if that makes any sense, but you do know this, that the world is filled with shallow people. They do not understand what it means to die to self. But what we can do is say, hey, you might need to be a little less selfish. And in that kind of language, in being able to kind of break it all down, is something that's very key. But you know, you can just hear the depth of Father Hyde's prayer, his Father Patrick's prayer, and again, just how disciplined he is with the regularity, but also obviously joyful enough. He's getting 1,000 people to come to church on a weekend. That's pretty dang good. You know, there are some places that are hurting pretty bad. And if he's getting 1,000, then he must be doing something right. And you know what he's doing right? He's living out his priesthood, which we believe today on, you know, on this very unique day, April 9th, 2020. Generally for podcasts, you're not supposed to name a date. You're supposed to keep things evergreen, which means you can listen to it anytime. But guess what? Holy Thursday is a day that we can live every day of our life. And why? Because it's all about the priesthood of Jesus Christ, and it's all about the Eucharist and the Holy Communion. And so for us priests, even though I gave a timestamp of April the 9th, 2020, I know that this message that Father Patrick and I discussed and what he really took the ball and ran with it, what he shared, is truly, truly everlasting. So I want to thank Father Patrick for being my special guest and to all of you listening to this show. And I certainly hope you enjoyed this deep dish discussion and maybe got something out of it for your own carryout order. And if you want to support our mission to bring about conversions one conversation at a time, all you got to do is visit the website at platinggrace.com. You'll be able to join eventually our network and, more importantly, gain access to all of our inspiring content. But between now and the next time we shoot the shiitake, stay hungry.
Teachings for an Unbelievable World is a newly discovered work written by St. John Paul II, then Archbishop Karol Wojtyła of Krakow, in the years just after Vatican II. This is the first English language publication of this important work. In this hardcover book that Scott Hahn calls one of the greatest hidden treasures unearthed in our time, 13 brief homilies provide compelling teaching for Catholics in today's post-Christian world and give fresh insights into JP2's pontificate. You can get a copy of this important new book at AveMariaPress.com. Use code JP2Teachings, that's JPIIteachings, to get 20% off your copy today. Looking for exceptional coffee delivered fresh to your door? We have the answer. Our friends at Grim Bean Coffee produce small-batch artisan coffee using top-tier coffee beans. The coffee is roasted when you order, guaranteeing the freshest coffee possible. Check out Breadbox Roasts, a new line of Catholic-themed coffees available at www.grimbeancoffee.com/Breadbox Media. Experience coffee like never before.